You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
This is the Maggie Dawn Show on the broadcast stations of Civic Media. Thank you for joining me. My name is Jim Santel. I am the host of Amicus, a law review, Saturday mornings here on those same broadcast stations. I am joined in the Racine Park studio of Civic Media by my terrific producer, Jacob. And together, for the next 2 hours, we are going to be talking about some of the major issues of the days. We have a special couple of hours lined up for you here on the Maggie Dawn Show. Let me begin by thanking Maggie once again for letting me sit in for her on this day when we are going to tackle those and other issues that may come to your attention during the course of these next 2 hours. As always, as Maggie does, as Jacob does, I will invite your questions, your comments, your inquiries, your observations about the things on our syllabus, on our ambitious agenda. You can call in. You can be a part of our discussion this very afternoon on the Maggie Dawn Show. That number is 855-752-4842. One more time, that's 855-752-4842. There is also a wonderful mechanism for you to send to Jacob and to me your observations, your comments on our chat line. Be a part of our discussion here this afternoon on Wednesday, August 6th. Here on the Maggie Dawn Show. Once again, honored that you have chosen to spend some of your time this afternoon with me and Jacob and others who may be a part of our conversation. Let me tell you about our outline for this hour and also next hour. Again, commentary on some major, including at least one breaking issue, and then two very special guests at the end of this first hour and the end of the second hour. Let me tell you about them first because you want to hold on. You want to be a part of our conversation, a part of our broadcast at that time. In the second half hour of our first hour, the broadcast this afternoon, I'm going to be talking with a friend, a lawyer, an advocate named Sandy Pendleton, Alexander Pendleton. He's a lawyer. And beyond that, beyond being a successful attorney, he has also been a dramatically important and significant advocate in finding ways to address this issue of reckless driving, not just in Milwaukee, throughout the state of Wisconsin, and frankly, has applications throughout the United States of America. Sandy will be with me in the second portion of this first hour to talk, first of all, about the inspiration that he had to take on this major, significant issue that threatens our safety and security. We're going to talk about the things that he has found out in terms of the dimension of the problem that we are confronting throughout Wisconsin, especially in southeastern Wisconsin, but beyond as well. He'll tell us all about the dimensions of that. He'll tell us what, in fact, can be done about these things. He's got outlines. He's got ideas. He's got concepts. And as we often say on the broadcast stations here, we know what can and should work because in those places that have implemented these kinds of remedies, they have worked. And so Sandy's going to be talking with us about all of those things. He is going to be focusing in particular upon the things, the questions you always ask, which are, what can I do about this? Am I powerless to respond in some meaningful way? And of course, the answer is no. Sandy Pendleton is going to be with us to tell us that the answer is no and identify ways in which we can not only individually, but by inspiring our elected and appointed representatives to respond to this problem. It is a social justice issue. It is a safety issue. It's a security issue. It is an issue that goes to the very, very lives and livelihoods of all of us in America, including right here in Wisconsin. Sandy Pendleton, once again, going to be joining me for the second portion of this first hour. Looking forward to that very much. And also taking your calls about his initiatives, his projects, his ideas. So be a part of that, too. In our second hour, the second half of our second hour here on the Maggie Dawn Show, inviting to our discussion a second good friend, a guest, also someone who is equally involved in advocacy here in Wisconsin. The issue is the environment, and in particular, the impact that the fossil fuel industry has on our communities. Once again, it is a social justice issue. And Dean Muller is going to be here. He is the chief executive and the leader of a wonderful group that is involved in identifying mechanisms for addressing this problem throughout the state of Wisconsin. It's called the Wisconsin for Environmental Justice Initiative. Dean Muller, who has been leading this charge, leading this advocacy for many years, is going to be here to describe the nature of the problem about which you know a lot, but probably not as many things as Dean knows. He's going to describe for you the specific focus of this group that he leads, again, called the Wisconsin for Environmental Justice Initiative. He is going to be also chatting with us about the specific focus of this group when it comes to, yes, that's right, tort litigation and the mechanisms by which individuals, groups of people can initiate tort litigation, that is civil litigation in our courts here in Wisconsin, presumably once again throughout the nation as well, tort litigation as a way of remediating the environmental issues caused by the fossil fuel industry right in our own backyards. Dean has a spectacularly interesting presentation to make to all of us. And once again, inviting your comments, your questions to Dean and to me about this particular initiative. We're going to be looking forward to Dean's participation in this, The Maggie Dawn Show, in the second half of our second hour. Stay tuned for that as well. Again, at the end of our first hour, listening to Sandy Pendleton, being a part of our conversation having to do with reckless driving. Those two major guests here on The Maggie Dawn Show this afternoon, Wednesday, August 6th. Again, delighted that you will be a part of this. Call us. Be a part of that discussion. That number, once again, 855-752-4842. As always, however, as Maggie does, as Jacob does, as other hosts who have the pleasure and the dignity and the honor of sitting in for Maggie in those instances when she is not here, rarely not here, we begin with some significant breaking news in America that also have some rule of law and social justice aspects to them as well. We know that we have got a national crisis, and yes, indeed, I've spoken about it. Maggie's talked about it this way. It is a medical health crisis as well. That crisis, of course, firearms in America, the numbers of guns out there, and the slaughter that continues in America on a regular basis. The number of mass shootings every single year continues to increase. The graph is dramatically going in the wrong direction. Again, we know well that these kinds of mass shootings, situations where four or more people are shot, they may die, they may not. Four or more people shot, that happens with alarming frequency in our nation, and yes, indeed, right here in the state of Wisconsin as well. We know, like the other issues we're going to be talking about this afternoon, we know what can solve this problem, at least begin to, again, mediate it somewhat. We've got those mechanisms out there to stop the onslaught, this healthcare, this health emergency in our nation. And it takes courage. It takes courage, but not a whole lot, candidly, to go into the legislature and make these things happen, passing laws at the federal level, at the state level, to try to address the issues that each one of us confronts. Safety and security compromised by too many guns, too many people out there using them in ways not contemplated and not protected plainly by the Second Amendment to the Constitution. We know well that a justice named Antonin Scalia changed our nation dramatically a number of years ago in a case called Heller versus D.C., finding for the first time in our nation's history that you do indeed have a constitutional right under the Second Amendment to possess and own and presumably to use weapons, a handgun in particular, for the purpose of self-defense in your particular residence, in the privacy of your home, for self-defensive purposes. That changed the entire meaning of the Second Amendment. It led to another case down the road called Bruin, in which, again, the Supreme Court expanded the breadth of Heller to include public places as well, the right to carry weapons. Significantly, in those cases, as articulated by Antonin Scalia, we know that that right, like every single right in the Constitution, is not unconditional. It is conditioned on restrictions related to what? To manufacture, to transfer, to sale, to use, times, places, circumstances, all of those things, appropriate and safety-based restrictions on the capacity to own and use weapons. All of that, the legal, the historical background, To note, as you all know well, that it has happened again in America. It has happened again just today. Five soldiers shot today, this day, at Fort Stewart Hunter. It's an Army airfield in Georgia. The gunman, who was apprehended just a couple of hours ago, identified. He's a sergeant in the soldiers' unit. We do not yet have a motive for this shooting, but I suspect that's going to come about at some point in the not-too-distant future. But we know that it has happened again. We know that other soldiers in the vicinity subdued, they tackled the assailant, the gunman, and brought him to the floor. At least two of them have suffered some serious injuries. Again, the latest report is that they're all stable at the hospital. They're being treated at a place called Memorial Health Hospital's Trauma Center. That's the only one in the particular region. The three other wounded soldiers are also being treated at a base hospital. Nonetheless, suffering injuries, probably not life-threatening, but it has happened again in America, this time once again at a military base. The base, it is the home of the 3rd Infantry Division, and the shooting took place in particular in the 2nd Armored Brigade Combat Team area. Now, what do we know about this particular area and this particular base? About 8,800 people live there at Fort Stewart, and it is located somewhere, it's just outside of Savannah, Georgia, about 40 miles southwest of Savannah. That's what we know about the location and the other aspects of this. We know as well that the Georgia Governor, Brian Kemp, he's expressed concern, of course, for the victims, right to do, and their families, and called the shooting a tragedy. Yes, indeed, wildly understating that it is human tragedy once again visiting America. The FBI obviously involved in this as well, along with military and Army Criminal Investigation Division authorities. President has been briefed on this as well. We know that this comes in the wake of other shootings on military bases in recent years. Remember when a gunman killed three people at a naval air station in Pensacola, Florida? That was in 2019, not all that long ago. He was then fatally shot by some other officers at that time. There is more precedent, ugly, horrific, tragic precedent for this as well. Same year, 2019, there was a Navy sailor who fatally shot two shipyard workers at the Pearl Harbor Naval Shipyard. And we know that in 2014, a soldier who is being evaluated for possible PTS opened fire at Fort Hood, Texas, killing three people, wounding 16. When we come back, we'll talk about other major news in America today here on The Maggie Dawn Show.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
This is The Maggie Dawn Show on the broadcast stations of Civic Media. My name is Jim Santel. I am sitting in for Maggie Dawn today and entertaining, as always, your questions, your comments, your inquiries. Delighted to have you be a part of our important discussion here in the Civic Media broadcast stations. The phone number is 855-752-4842, or you can also drop your question, your comment to my producer, Jacob, and me into our chat line as well. I promised that we would talk as well in this segment about some of the latest news also related to justice issues. And that includes reporting from a number of different very reliable sources that there is a movement afoot, as we know, inside the present administration to identify and to initiate investigations of people based upon less than compelling evidence that there's a basis to do just that. But we do know, based upon reliable reporting just yesterday and today, that the Attorney General of the United States of America has authorized prosecutors. These are assistant United States attorneys. These are lawyers inside the Department of Justice, criminal prosecutors, to begin to investigate an inquiry. My president calls it the Russia hoax. And perhaps, depending upon where this goes, what its dimension may be, to present some sort of case, some sort of evidence to a grand jury in South Florida. That's right, a federal district grand jury in South Florida Again, if the evidence warrants it, and that's an important aspect of this, which we'll get back to. According to an awful lot of people, this focuses once again upon the investigation into his 2016 campaign connections to Russia. Now, what do we recall about that? It seems very old that we're coming up almost on a decade since that time. We know that based upon, and here is the key, based upon reliable, credible, not compelling at the time, not beyond a reasonable doubt evidence, but a reason to believe that Russia may have had some impact and even some involvement with the Trump campaign in the 2016 election. What happens based upon the finding that there is a basis upon which to investigate that matter, not necessarily to charge it at the outset, now not coming to any conclusion, but a basis, a legitimate law enforcement assessment by the Department of Justice at that time, the Deputy Attorney General, ultimately assigning, commissioning a fellow named Bob Mueller, the former director of the FBI, to undertake as a special counsel investigation into whether there is anything here, if there was a there or not. And we know the result of that was the so-called Mueller report. And that commented not only upon it finding by Bob Mueller, based upon all of the information that he had assembled, that in fact there was not a conspiracy, no conspiracy of a legal nature to tie the Trump campaign to Russia and to Russian actors. An awful lot of discussion at that time about the word collusion, but Bob Mueller focusing instead upon the notion of conspiracy, which of course is a group that comes together for an illegal purpose designed for that reason to get to that illegal end, find that there is no result that would suggest a conspiracy between Russia and the campaign, but goes on in a second portion to identify easily 6, 8, 10 instances in which the President of the United States of America engaged in obstruction of justice in connection with that very investigation. Those are the two parts of the Mueller report. And that's what now is going to be resurfacing once again in large measure. The investigation into that 2016 campaign allegation about connections, again, not established at a legal conspiracy level, showing basically some parallelism in what Russia and the Trump campaign was doing, but finding unequivocally that the president had engaged in instances of obstruction of justice. That's what Bob Mueller found at the time of his report. The report also issued by his staff. And we know much about that in the 9 or so years since that time. It does not result in any impeachment. It does not result in any prosecution. And so to the extent that those obstruction of justice counts could have been out there, they were never prosecuted. Here, we have the initiation of an investigation, presumably, again, reporting that's taking place in South Florida. Reluctant they are probably to initiate such an investigation in the District of Columbia, which would normally be the venue for this kind of thing. Some concern about whether or not a group of sympathetic jurors, grand jurors, might not view very favorably that kind of investigation. But we know that a lot of this comes from the referral made by Tulsi Gabbard, who's the director of national intelligence, about revisiting what happened way back in 2016, perhaps some Barack Obama involvement, other things. Again, based upon a report that does not provide a lot of support to initiate a grand jury investigation. Nonetheless, likely afoot in the Southern District of Florida. What is a grand jury investigation about? It is all private, of course, which is one significant point. We normally don't announce grand jury investigations publicly for a number of very good reasons, including the legitimacy of the very process and the notion we want to protect the integrity of those people who might be targets. Here, apparently, our attorney general announcing this fairly publicly could include subpoenas to individuals to come and testify again in that private setting, could involve the taking of interviews and the presentation of that information to a grand jury, maybe testimony by grand jury, by government officials to that grand jury. Presumably, if you're going to look at the investigators themselves, investigating the investigators, you're going to call some of them. subpoenaing them to do all of this, again, without much idea about where this may all be going. And so we identify that as a major rule of law issue, breaking today, breaking yesterday, perhaps a part of the president's indication that he is going to be retribution. When we come back here on the Maggie Dawn Show, we're going to be talking to Sandy Pendleton all about reckless driving. We're welcoming him to talk about the nature of the problem. Sandy's got some great insights into this and also the ways in which we can all be a part of the solution. Stay with us for that important discussion here on the Maggie Dawn Show. This is the Maggie Dawn Show. My name is Jim Santel, guest hosting for these 2 hours on this Wednesday afternoon. Delighted, honored to have a very special guest on the Maggie Dawn Show, and we're going to get to him right now. His name is Sandy Pendleton. Let me tell you a little bit about him, and then let me get Sandy involved in our conversation about reckless driving in Milwaukee and applications beyond Milwaukee as well. Sandy, as I said, a longstanding, outstanding lawyer, attorney, counselor, advisor in the greater Milwaukee area. When he is not actively practicing law, in those few moments when he has additional time to focus upon the community in which we all live, he does just that. He's a well-known advocate for better streets, safer streets, security and safety in Milwaukee, Wisconsin generally. Sandy is a frequent speaker on this issue of reckless driving, what it's about, what are its causes, what can we do about it, what are the findings that could provide some support for all of that. And we're going to chat right now about the nature of the problem, how broad it is, the laws that are out there that exist to deter it, and what else we can do in that area. And again, importantly, what can we as individual people do? What can we do to involve our government in doing all of this? Welcome, Sandy Pendleton, to the Maggie Dawn Show. Delighted to have you with me.
Good afternoon, Jim. Great to be here. Thank you for inviting me on.
Excellent. Let's begin with you, my friend. Sandy Pendleton, you are a lawyer. You're active. You have an outstanding practice. Describe the connection between that and what got you into, what attracted you to trying to remedy this problem of reckless driving. What is your connection into this very important issue for all of us?
So I'm a business attorney. I served for many years, more than 20 years on the Wisconsin Technology Council. I have a deep interest in ensuring that the Wisconsin economy remains vital for its people, for its community. And one of the things I saw in this is, you know, when businesses are deciding where they want to live, where smart, talented, intelligent, creative people are deciding where they want to live in a safe community. They want to live in a community that's walkable and bikeable. And, you know, that is a key indicator as to whether Madison is going to succeed, whether Eau Claire is going to succeed, whether Milwaukee is going to succeed. What are our neighborhoods like? What are our streets like? And I became concerned as somebody who's practiced in Madison and practiced in Milwaukee that Milwaukee is falling behind, that we're failing our residents when it comes to ensuring our streets are safe, safe for kids, safe for families, safe for pedestrians, safe for bike riders, safe for all users of our streets. So I got more involved in advocating for better streets and better roads, safer streets, because I see it as not just a personal safety issue, but also a vital economic issue for our state, for our major communities in our state.
Great connections that affect all of us. And so, Sandy, tell us about the nature of this problem. I know you've studied this. You talk about it. You're a wonderful advocate for the remedies to it. Can you give our listeners some sense of the dimensions of the problem? We see it a lot in the news, but give us some sense about why this is something that is more than just a blip here and there. It is a major, again, as you have said, it is a justice issue. It's a safety issue. It's a commerce issue. Tell us about the dimension of the problem we are facing.
So I speak on this issue frequently. Anytime I go to speak to a group on this issue, first question I ask is, hey, raise your hand. Who of you thinks reckless driving is a problem in your community? I have yet to go to a meeting where all hands go up every time I ask that question. And it's something that we don't really need a study. If you've driven down I-94, if you've driven on I-43, you know the number of reckless drivers out there. You see the problem. If you drive on Capitol Drive, if you drive on North Port Washington Road, if you drive any major street in Milwaukee or side street, you're well familiar with the problem of reckless driving, and it's getting worse in Milwaukee in particular. Now, the Wisconsin Department of Transportation tells us that every year about 100 people die from reckless driving. Now, that is, you know, a lot of people are killed because of speed, and they don't classify that as reckless driving necessarily, unless it's very, very high speed. A lot of people are killed due to drunk drivers. Again, the DOT may not calculate that as or classify that just as reckless driving. But as to how they define it, over 100 people each year in Wisconsin are getting killed by reckless drivers. Over 3,000 people, according to them, WISDOT, are getting seriously injured due to reckless driving. And the sad fact is, the majority of those, every year, year after year, are in the Milwaukee area. Some years, it's close to 80% of all of the fatalities that happen due to reckless driving in our state are in the Milwaukee area. So it's a clear and present danger in Milwaukee. It's something that's not a Democratic issue or a Republican issue. It's an issue that we as citizens and we as and our politicians, our elected officials, we need to come together and address this issue and better deter it. We need to do a better job than we are now deterring it. It's really only a small percentage of the riders out, drivers out there. I know we see it all the time, but when you think about the good drivers versus the bad drivers, the reckless drivers, it's really only a small number of individuals. If we can get those reckless drivers pulled over, if we can impound their vehicles temporarily, provide immediate consequences for a behavior, if we can also better detect them, right? Be identifying them through new technological means, we can solve this problem. We can create a culture in our communities of street safety. You go to other states, you go to other countries, you don't see the type of driving that you see in Southeast Wisconsin. It doesn't have to be this way. We can fix this if we're smart and we have the political will and we organize and talk about this to our elected officials. It's fixable.
Right. And so, Sandy, you just mentioned two aspects of the regulatory aspect, legislative, and the technology also. Talk with us a bit about some of the technology that's out there and the ways in which, again, by implementing some of that in our communities, what are the tech responses that can help us do a better job in bringing this to a perhaps not a complete conclusion, but at least reducing it dramatically?
Right. So like I said, I served on the Wisconsin Technology Council for many years. I saw, you know, really bright Wisconsin innovators, entrepreneurs coming up with new ways to address an identified problem. So this is an identified problem. Let's think about how the technology of cars have changed over the last 100 years. Let's think about how the technology of phones have changed over the last 100 years. Dramatic changes, right? But then let's think about how we enforce our traffic regulations in the last 100 years. We're still doing it the exact same way we did in 1920, 1925. We're having a police officer in a car turn on his red light, chase after the person that he saw speeding or running the red light, and then trying to catch that person and pull him over and give him a ticket. Why are we doing things in such an outdated way when there's new technology that allows us, that's proven effective in reducing speeding, reducing red light running, reducing the number of accidents, reducing the severity of accidents? That technology exists, and it's being used in almost a majority of states in the United States, but it's not being used anywhere in Wisconsin. Why are we technological luddites? Why are we slow to pick up what other states are doing to reduce the number of people who are killed on the roads each year. So that technology is automated camera systems, right? Okay. It's speed safety cameras. It's red light safety cameras, right? All it is, it's not just a camera. It's a system. It's a system of regulations. It's a system of camera technology. It's a system of software, and it's a system of computers and personnel. All those things come together and they result in creating consequences for the type of behavior we want to deter better than we are now.
So, Sandy, respond to those who would say, well, wait a minute, we don't need more cameras, right? We don't need more people watching us. Why is this different? Why is this not in that category of Big Brother type thing? And why does it, in fact, promote actually just the opposite of that, a more safe and secure environment for us to live? What do you say to that argument?
So we really have to distinguish between the crime deterrence cameras, crime surveillance cameras, which are flock cameras. You see those in like maybe 20 communities in Southeast Wisconsin, and the traffic enforcement camera systems, traffic safety camera systems. Those aren't used anywhere in Wisconsin. They're widely used around the world and in the United States and other states, but not in Wisconsin. And these traffic safety systems, this new technology, they are designed not to, you know, be Big Brother, not to take the picture of you and use face recognition and track your every movement. That's not what a traffic safety system does. It takes a picture of your car. It takes, or the car that's being driven through the red light, I should say. Not your car, Jim. It's some scufflaw out there. It takes a picture of the car. And most importantly, it has the software that is able to read the license plate number so that a citation can be issued to that person who flagrantly ran a red light or who went through an intersection at more than 15 miles per over the speed limit, right? So, it's not the same thing as a regular traffic system. It doesn't take points off. It's more like a parking ticket is the way it should be set up and the way it is being set up in a lot of other states. Like a parking ticket.
And in those other states.
Just that little thing, that little disincentive, that citation that dramatically improves compliance with speed limits and traffic systems and makes our streets safer.
And in those places where that has been implemented, it is one of the solutions we know can address this problem.
Right. I mean, a lot of times they say, well, does this have a 5% effect? Does this have a 10% effect? Well, if it does, that's a good study. We should enforce it. With these type of things, we're talking about 40, 50% reductions in speeding. We're talking about, Phoenix has had 70% reductions in speeding in corridors that they put these in, and 40% reductions in the number of crashes and the number of injuries, severe injury crashes. So that's the type of effectiveness we're talking about that seems worthwhile to try, at least on a pilot basis, at least for a limited period of time, 5 years in Milwaukee. And that's what a bill that's pending currently in the legislature would do.
We're going to get back into our next segment to talk more about that legislative response. I know, Sandy, you've also monitored. We've just got a limited time in this segment to talk about the impact upon individuals. And perhaps you can just begin to chat a little bit about somebody who is named Aaron Morganson, who was obviously a victim of this kind of thing. I'm going to ask you to tell us more about Aaron Morganson, her story, when we come back, and then get into some of those more significant legislative issues as well. Stay with us. We're going to continue our conversation with Sandy Pendleton all about this major issue, reckless driving in Wisconsin and Milwaukee, things we can all do here as we continue that discussion here on the Maggie Dawn Show.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
This is the Maggie Dawn Show. My name is Jim Santel. We are having a thoughtful and productive discussion with a colleague and friend. His name is Sandy Pendleton. We're talking all about reckless driving. Sandy, just before we broke here briefly, we were chatting about some of the personal, individual impact And I was asking you about an individual named Aaron Morganson. Others like her out there, but tell us briefly about Aaron's plight and her victimization as a result of reckless driving.
So Aaron was a wonderful young woman. She went to high school with my youngest daughter, as a matter of fact. They ran on the cross-country team together. In 2023, she got married. She was blessed. She and her husband were expecting a child. She was driving down Capitol Drive one day, and a reckless driver ran a red light, collided with Aaron's car, and killed her and her unborn child. That was on November 2nd, 2023. If people want to read more about Aaron's story, there is a website that was created and a movement created in her memory by her father, who's a friend of mine, Mark Hagen. If you go onto the web and you look, you enter Enough is Enough, a legacy for Aaron, you can see what Aaron's family and other families of people who've been killed by reckless drivers, some of the things they're trying to do in Milwaukee to ensure tragedies like Aaron's don't happen again. There's too many families who've been just so badly hurt. And again, this is unnecessary. We don't see this in other communities in the state. We don't see this in many communities around the U.S. or around the world. This is an aberration. It's a recent aberration. It can be fixed.
Sandy, while you and I were chatting, we had a listener who dropped a comment about her concern about tailgating. And I know you've got some perspectives on that, just not only in the expressways is what our listener was talking about, but also on the streets of Milwaukee, other places. Talk with us a little bit about that particular issue.
Sure. We see it all the time. You drive down from Milwaukee to Chicago or Milwaukee to the Wisconsin Dells, and you see drivers at high speeds tailgating or weaving in and out of traffic. It's an obvious danger on our interstate. But even more so in our communities, like, say, on Capitol Drive or Northport Washington Road, because so many drivers are tailgating, when the car in front sees a pedestrian who's about to step off the curb or looks like they want to cross the road or is in a crosswalk, they're often frightened to come to a stop and yield to that pedestrian because they're concerned that that driver behind them is going to rear end them because they're driving so closely. Or I even heard people say, well, the light turned yellow and I knew that if I slowed down for that light, that tailgating driver was going to rear end me. So yes, I agree with the texter that tailgating is a dangerous thing. And it's endangering not only people on the interstate, but pedestrians on our streets, drivers on our streets, bike riders on our streets.
One of the problems, including in this entire package of things, let's talk about some solutions here. I know you're on top of legislative initiatives out there, including impoundment and a thing called Safe Roads, Safe Lives. Tell us what our listeners can do in terms of reaching out to their legislative representatives to advocate for legislative change. How can the laws respond to this problem?
Right. So first about there is a state statute that allows police officers a tool in their toolbox. Right. They don't need to use it all the time, but allows them to impound the vehicles driven by a recklessly driven vehicle driver. If somebody was to walk out into the street and fire off six rounds into the air and the police officer comes up to him and say, he's not going to just give that gun right back to him. Same thing with a reckless driver. The police officer shouldn't have to give that car, that dangerous implement, back to that reckless driver immediately. We want to change the law so that that tool is more effective, that the first time someone's engaged in a highly reckless behavior, like fleeing from an officer or driving more than 25 miles per hour with a speed limit, an officer should have the discretion to immediately impound temporarily that vehicle, right? That guy's got to walk home that night, or that guy's got to call his girlfriend or his mom and say, oh, the car's in the impound lot. That's an immediate consequence. And I think that's a good common sense legislation. So call your legislature, say you favor. Oh, this bill unanimously passed in the assembly. It can also pass in the Senate, but people need to contact their senators and call for that. Also, the Safe Roads, Save Lives Act, as long as you're contacting your elected representatives, ask for that. That is a pilot that would allow a pilot project in Milwaukee to use this new technology. This new technology that would enable Milwaukee in an equitable way to distribute red light cameras, a limited number of red light cameras around Milwaukee to see if over a five-year period that brings down excess speeding, that brings down red light running, that brings down the number of car crashes, and that brings down the number of serious injuries and fatalities in Milwaukee. Something needs to be done in Milwaukee. There's some common sense things, some legislation that's pending in the Senate right now and in the Assembly. It's Senate Bill 375. You don't need to remember that number. All you need to remember is Safe Roads, Save Lives Act. I urge people to contact their elected officials and ask them to support this as soon as you can.
That is Sandy Pendleton, lawyer, advocate, community, social justice advocate as well. And it is a social justice issue, as we have been talking. Sandy, I appreciate so much your appearing with me, with all of our listeners here today to talk about this important issue and the ways in which we can respond to it. We will look forward to future discussions with you about this topic on this broadcast and others. Sandy, thank you so much for being a part of our discussion.
Thank you, Jim. Good. I appreciate the opportunity. Enjoyed it.
We're coming back with more of the Maggie Dawn Show right after this.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.